Track 17. Mary prays while Jesus agonizes in the garden. Judas's last encounter with Mary, and Mary is the new Eve.
After leaving the house of the Last Supper and taking his apostles to a garden in Gethsemane, Jesus takes three of them with him, Peter, John, and his brother James, and leaves them while he prays. A very saddened Jesus returns to find the three apostles dozing. He says, "Have you been not able to keep awake for just 1 hour? I need your comfort and your prayers so much." And they promise to remain alert and stay awake. Maria Valtorta writes, "The moon, now shining on Jesus, shows his distressed, sorrowful, aged face. His eyes are still dilated, but they seem clouded. His mouth is twisted with tiredness. He goes back to his rock more slowly and more stooped. He kneels, resting his arms on the rock, and a little plant has grown on it, with flowers like small snowflakes, spraying the grey rock and the little dark green leaves. Jesus lays his hands near them and looks at them. He caresses them. He speaks to them. 'You are here as well. You comfort me. These little flowers were also in my mother's little grotto, and she loved them. Oh, my mother!' He bursts into tears, his head on his joined hands. I see and I hear him weep, and I hear him say, 'Also at Bethlehem, and I brought them to you, mother. But these ones, who will bring them to you now?' He takes off his mantle. He kisses it and says, 'Forgive me, mother, forgive me.' He seems to be asking it of the cloth spun and woven by motherly love. He puts it on again. Jesus' anguish and torment increases, and he runs towards his apostles and finds them fast asleep a second time. He wakens them and pleads, 'If the spirit is willing, the flesh is weak. Help me.' And they promise to remain alert and stay awake. All the brightness of Jesus' face is cancelled by a deadly tiredness. He says, 'I feel an anguish that is killing me. Oh, yes, my soul is sad even unto death. My friends, my friends.' But they are too heavy with sleep, and he returns to where he was, to suffer the terrible abandonment by God and the torment of Satan. Jesus moans, having the death rattle in his throat, and sobbing like one in agony. 'Nothing, nothing. Away. The will of my Father, his will. Your will, Father, yours, not mine. In vain, I have but one Lord, the most holy God, one law, obedience, one love, redemption. No, I no longer have a mother. I have no life any more. I have no divinity any longer. I no longer have a mission. In vain you tempt me, devil, through my mother, my life, my divinity, and my mission. Mankind is my mother, and I love it to the extent of dying for it. I am giving my life back to him who gave it to me, and who is now asking me for it, the supreme master of all living beings. I assert my divinity as it is capable of this expiation. I am fulfilling my mission through my death. I have nothing else except to do the will of the Lord my God. Be off, Satan. I said so the first and the second time. I repeat it for the third time. Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass me by. But your will be done, not mine. Be off, Satan. I belong to God. Then he speaks no more, except to say, panting, God, God, God. He calls him at each heartbeat, and at each beat blood seems to flow out of him. The cloth on his shoulders gets soaked through and becomes dark, notwithstanding that the clear moonlight illuminates it completely. A brighter light appears above his head, hanging about a meter above him. It is so bright that even the prostrate master can see it filter through his wavy hair, already weighed down by blood, and notwithstanding the veil of blood covering his eyes. He raises his head. The moon shines on his poor face, and more brightly shines the angelic light, which is like the white-blue diamond of the star Venus. And all the dreadful agony appears in the blood, transuding from his pores. His eyelashes, hair, moustache and beard are sprinkled and covered with blood. Blood trickles from his temples. Blood spouts from the veins of his neck. His hands drip blood. And when he stretches his hands towards the angelic light and his wide sleeves slide back towards his elbows, Christ's forearms can be seen sweating blood. His tears draw two neat lines in the red mask of his face. He takes off his mantle again and wipes his hands, face, neck and forearms. But his sweat continues. He presses the cloth against his face several times, and every time he changes its position, clear impressions appear on the dark red cloth. And as they are damp, they seem to be black. The grass on the ground is red with blood. Jesus seems to be on the point of fainting. He unties the neck of his tunic as if he felt that he was suffocating. He takes his hand to his heart and then to his head, and he waves it in front of his face as if he wanted to fan himself with his mouth half open. He drags himself towards the rock, and he leans with his back against the escarpment, his arms hanging along his body as if he were already dead. The angelic light slowly fades away. Jesus reopens his eyes. He raises his head with difficulty. He looks around. He is alone, but he is less anguished. He stretches out one hand, he draws to himself the mantle that he had left on the grass, and wipes his face, hands, neck, beard, and hair again. He takes a large leaf, all wet with dew, and he continues to clean himself with it, wetting his face and hands, and then drying himself again. And he does the same several times with other leaves, until he wipes out the traces of his dreadful sweat. Only his tunic is stained. He looks at it and shakes his head. He looks also at his mantle, but he sees that it is too stained. He folds it and lays it on the rock. Weak and with difficulty, he turns around and kneels down. He prays. Then, leaning on the rock, he stands up, and still staggering a little, he goes to the disciples. His face is very pale, but it is no longer upset. It is a face full of divine beauty, although it is deadly pale and much sadder than usual. Jesus tells Maria Valtorta of the power of Mary's prayer, which helped him in his anguish. I was God who had become flesh, a flesh that, without stain, had the spiritual strength of dominating the flesh. And I do not refuse, on the contrary, I implore the help of the full of grace. In that hour of expiation, she would have also found heaven closed over her head. That is true. But not to the extent that she should not succeed in detaching an angel from heaven, since she is the queen of angels, to console her son. Oh, not for herself, poor mother. She also has tasted the bitter abandonment by the Father. But by means of that suffering offered for redemption, she obtained and made it possible for me to overcome the anguish of the Garden of Olives. Overcome with remorse for having betrayed Jesus, a deranged Judas Iscariot casts his purse containing his blood money at the high priest in the temple, and twice meets the procession taking Jesus to his trials. He departs from the town centre, taking the poorest lanes at random, and he ends up again at the house of the supper. It is all closed as if it were abandoned. He stops. He looks at it. The mother, he whispers, the mother. He is undecided. I have a mother as well, and I have killed a son of a mother. And yet I want to go in, to see that room again. He knocks at the door. He knocks again and again. The mistress of the house comes and half opens the door. She utters a cry and tries to close the door again, but Judas opens it wide with a push of his shoulder, and knocking down the terrified woman, he goes in. He runs towards the little door of the supper room. He opens it, enters, and goes towards the table. The chalice enchants him. A little red wine is still in the bottom of it. Blood, blood, blood also here. His blood, his blood. Do this in memory of me. Take this and drink it. This is my blood, the blood of the New Testament that will be shed for you. Ah, I am cursed. It can no longer be shed for me to remit my sin. I do not ask to be forgiven because he cannot forgive me. Away, away. There is no place where the Cain of God can find peace. Death, death to me. He goes out. He suddenly finds himself in front of Mary, who is standing at the door of the room where Jesus left her. Hearing a noise, she has looked out. She looks as pale as if she had lost all her blood. Judas meets those eyes that look at him with the same sorrowful, conscious knowledge with which Jesus looked at him in the street. And uttering a frightened, "Oh!" he leans against the wall. "Judas," says Mary, "why have you come?" The same words as Jesus' words, and they are spoken with sad love. Judas remembers them and shouts. "Judas," repeats Mary, "what have you done? To so much love, have you replied by betraying?" Mary's voice is a trembling caress. Judas is about to run away. Mary calls him with a voice that should have converted a demon. "Judas! Judas! Stop! Stop! Listen! I am telling you in his name. Repent! Judas! He forgives!" Judas has run away. Mary's voice, her appearance, have been a coup de grace, or rather a coup of disgrace, because he resists her. He meets John, who is going towards the house to get Mary. The sentence has been passed. Jesus is about to go to Calvary, and it is time to take Mary to her son. John recognizes Judas, although there is little left of the handsome Judas of not long ago. "You here! Be cursed, you killer of the Son of God! The Master has been condemned. Rejoice if you can, but get out of the way. I'm going to get the mother. Do not let her meet you, you reptile." And Judas runs away. Jesus speaks to Maria Valtorta about Mary, the new Eve. He says, "Humanity has undergone a complete regeneration through the deeds of the couple Jesus and Mary, who have thus become the new founders of the human family. All the previous time has been cancelled. The time and story of man are reckoned as from this moment, in which the new Eve, through a complete change and inversion of creation, and through the deed of the Lord, generates the new Adam from her immaculate womb. We possess the perfect love, we the perfect chaste ones. This love embraced God in heaven, and being united to him as branches are to the tree trunk nourishing them, it spread and descended, lavishing rest, shelter, nourishment and comfort on the earth and on its inhabitants. No one was excluded from this love, not even the wicked, because they also, dead limbs, were still limbs of the great body of creation, and therefore we saw in them the holy image of the Lord, who had formed them in his image and likeness. We loved, as nobody else loved. We carried love to the summits of perfection, so that with our ocean of love we might fill the abyss excavated by the lack of love of the first parents, who loved themselves more than they loved God. I want to speak now of one only, of my mother, not of myself. The new Eve, since her most tender years, had rejected the blandishments used by Satan to induce her to bite the fruit and to taste its flavour that had made Adam's companion insane. She had not confined herself to rejecting Satan, but had defeated him by crushing him under such a vast will of obedience, love, and chastity that he, the cursed one, was overwhelmed and subjugated. No, Satan will not rise from under the heel of my virgin mother. He slavers and foams, he roars and curses, but his slaver dribbles downwards, and his howling does not touch the atmosphere that surrounds my holy mother. When Cain killed Abel, the mouth of their mother uttered curses that were suggested by her spirit, separated from God, against her closest neighbour, the son of her womb, who was profaned by Satan and soiled by an indecent desire. Mary had to cancel Eve. Mary sees the second Cain, Judas. She knows that he is the Cain of her Jesus, of the second Abel. She knows that the blood of this second Abel has been sold by that Cain and is already being spread. But she does not curse. She loves and forgives. She loves and calls back. O maternity of Mary the Martyr! Maternity as sublime as your virginal divine maternity. God presented you with the latter, but you, Holy Mother, co-redemptrix, presented yourself with the former. Because in that hour, with your heart torn to pieces by the scourges that had torn my flesh to pieces, you alone were able to speak those words to Judas. And you alone, in that hour, when you felt the cross break your heart, were able to love and forgive. Mary, the new Eve, teaches you the new religion that urges love to forgive him who has killed a son. Do not be like Judas, who closes his heart to this mistress of grace and despair, saying, "He cannot forgive me." He questioned the words of the Mother of Truth, and consequently my words, which had always repeated that I had come to save and not to lose, to forgive those who came to me repentant. The new life for mankind and for individual men begins from Mary. Her virtues and her way of living are your school. And in her grief, in which all aspects appeared, also that of forgiveness for the killer of her son, is your salvation.